Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Contra Radio Network. Preparedness Radio. With your host, John Jeffers.
And good afternoon. I'm John Jeffers. It's Thursday, October 20th. This is going to be an impromptu episode because I got to make up for that abortion of an episode recorded last night. Not that Terry or Chuck did anything bad. It's just it was a subpar episode on my part. And I will not subject you, my listeners, and the people that have graciously donated their money to support this show to what I would consider a subpar episode. So this episode that I'm doing now is to make up for last night. Now, let me get through some housekeeping stuff. We got some things we have to talk about. I'm not going to take any phone calls. You don't have to even call in. All right. Now, I need the mailing addresses for Scott Warner and Jim. Well, I think I got Jim's already. Yeah, I need Jim W's address too. Email me your addresses, guys, at ContraRadioLive.com, ContraRadioLive.com. I've got to get you some thank you gifts sent out for donating to the show. I appreciate it. Message to Allison A. and Justin M. Your thank you packages are en route. Okay, we were supposed to announce the winners of the giveaways last night, but because my computer crashed and I was unable to get it up until about 1 o'clock this morning, I got it fixed. So for those winners, I have sent you emails notifying you of winning. So if you... We put together the backpack, the DVD Amerigeddon, the Travis Fleming knife, and the NRA DVD. We had four winners, and I went ahead and emailed them their notifications. I need a couple of them to get me read your messages. Some of you did not put down your mailing addresses, so if you want your prize, send your email or send your mailing address back to me. I appreciate it. Get that taken care of. As I said at the beginning of last night's show, and I'm going to say again, because I deleted that episode. I didn't like it at all. And we have over 12,600 listeners in the last 30 days. The last 30 days, 12,600 listeners. We have also had well over 102,000 downloads of the Contra Radio Network, and I thank you, listeners, for that. That's important. Now, let me get back to this. If you followed about last week, we were talking about the DEF CON condition. And it went from 5, in fact, it's been at 5 for quite some time. And it went to 4. It was at 4 during the show. I think Chuck looked it up. And yeah. And then the next, I think 2 days later, it was at a 3. So I posted this story that I found. It was from newsprepper.com. I found it and I posted it. It's from July of this year, July 2016. And it is just setting the CRN Facebook page. People are sharing it, whatnot. And so I wanted to share this. I want to share that article because it's going to set the tone for the other four things that have happened since then. And you should not be frightened. You should be concerned. Because when you're concerned, you're going to be more apt to act or respond appropriately. So a message to the Contra crew got people. Make sure you start getting, still collect water, but also start collecting your basic medical supplies. All right? Basic medical supplies. Gauze, bandages, Band-Aids, peroxide, you know, rubbing alcohol, all the little stuff. All right? You know, I would get lots of ibuprofen, big bottles of ibuprofen. I would also get, you like some omeprazole or Nexium over-the-counter stuff, because there's going to be a lot of people who's going to have a lot of heartburn stuff. If the grid goes down, the balloon goes up, and we have a critical incident, and you just happen to be in the zone of badness. Today I'm drinking Essentia, hydration perfected. That's water, 9.5 pH or higher. It's ionized alkaline water. Tastes pretty good. All right, let's get started with it. Newsprepper.com, it's called War is Coming. The whole world knows it except the people of the United States. Now, on the surface, things seem pretty quiet in mid-July 2016. The biggest news stories are about the speculation surrounding Donald Trump's choice of running mate. Stock market in the U.S. keeps setting new all-time record highs, and the media seems completely obsessed with Taylor Swift's love life. But underneath the surface, it is a very different story, as you will see below. The conditions for a perfect storm are coming together very rapidly, and the rest of 2016 promises to be much more chaotic than what we've seen so far. Now, that's going to be on the test, so remember, the rest of 2016 promises to be much more chaotic than what we have seen so far. And this article is from mid-July 2016. As a matter of fact, July 16th of 2016, all right? So let's start with China. On Tuesday, an international tribunal in The Hague ruled against China's territorial claim in the South China Sea. The Chinese government announced ahead of time that they do not recognize the jurisdiction of the tribunal, and they have absolutely no intention of abiding by the ruling. In fact, China is becoming even more defiant in the aftermath of this ruling. We aren't hearing much about it in the U.S. media, but according to international news reports, Chinese President Xi Jinping has ordered the People's Liberation Army to prepare for combat with the United States if the Obama administration presses China to abandon the islands that they are currently occupying in the South China Sea. Now, do you remember, I reported on this. I even posted the stories on the CNN Facebook page. So Chinese President Xi Jinping has reportedly ordered the PLA, the People's Liberation Army, to prepare for combat, reports Ararang.com. That's Ararang.com. U.S.-based Boxin News said Tuesday that the instruction was given in case the United States takes provocative action in the waters once the ruling is made. Now, U.S. aircraft carrier and fighter jets were already sent to the region in anticipation of the ruling, with the Chinese Navy also carrying out exercises near the disputed Paracel Islands. Excuse me. Now, last October, China said it was not frightened to fight a war with the U.S. following an incident where the guided missile destroyer, the USS Laysan, violated the 12 nautical mile zone China claims around the Subi and Mischief Reefs in the Spratly Archipelago. Meanwhile, the relationship between the United States and Russia continues to go from bad to worse, and now we all know why. Thanks to the email release, the installation of a missile defense system in Romania is just the latest incident that has the Russians absolutely steaming, and during a public appearance on June 17th, Russian President Vladimir Putin tried to get Western reporters to understand that the world is being pulled toward war. Quote, "We know year by year what's going to happen. And they know that we know. It's only you that they tell tales to, and you buy it and spread it to the citizens of your countries. You people, in turn, do not feel a sense of the impending danger. This is what worries me. How do you not understand that the world is being pulled in an irreversible direction while they pretend that nothing is going on? I don't know how to get through to you anymore." End quote. And of course, the Russians have been feverishly updating and modernizing their military in preparation for a potential future conflict with the United States. Just today, we learned the Russians are working to develop a hypersonic strategic bomber that is going to have the capability of striking targets with nuclear warheads from outer space. We've been working on that too. Now, unfortunately, the Obama administration does not feel a similar sense of urgency. The size of our strategic nuclear arsenal has declined by about 95% since the peak of the Cold War, and many of the installations are still actually using rotary phones and the kind of 8-inch floppy disk for computers that were widely used back in the 1970s. Now, I don't expect war with China or Russia to erupt by the end of 2016. Of much more immediate concern is what's going on in the Middle East. The situation in Syria continues to deteriorate, but it is Israel that could soon be the center of attention. Now, back in March, the Wall Street Journal reported that the Obama administration wanted to revive the peace process in the Middle East before Obama left office, and that a UN Security Council resolution that would divide the land of Israel and set the parameters for a Palestinian state was still definitely on the table. The White House is working on plans for reviving long-stalled Middle East negotiations before President Barack Obama leaves office, including a possible UN security resolution that would outline steps toward a deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians, according to senior U.S. officials. Hold on. Let's take a break here. I want to say something here. So the U.N. Security Council wants to pass a resolution that would divide the land of Israel and set the parameters for a Palestinian state. That would be akin, in my mind, to the UN telling the United States that you have to give back or you have to give land to Mexico. Yes, it's true they lost their land in the 1840s, but they want it back now. So the UN says, you have to give it back. You have to give back California, Arizona, New Mexico, parts of Texas. You got to give it back. Now, it may not be the most accurate analogy I can come up with, but I think you get the idea. It would be unacceptable to the United States for that to happen, and it'd be unacceptable to Israel for that to happen. All right, let me get back to it now. According to the story, just this week, the Washington Post reported that there were renewed rumblings about just such a resolution. Israel is facing a restive European Union, which is backing a French initiative that seeks to outline a future peace deal by year's end that would probably include a call for the withdrawal of Israeli troops and the creation of a Palestinian state. For years, Barack Obama has stressed the need for a Palestinian state, and now that his second term is drawing to a close, certainly not fast enough, he certainly realizes that this is the last chance to take action at the UN. If he's going to pull the trigger and support a UN resolution formally establishing a Palestinian state, it will almost certainly happen before the election in November. So over the coming months, we'll be watching these developments very carefully. And it's interesting to note that there is an organization called Americans for Peace Now. Oh, God, I just want to puke. Americans for Peace Now that is collecting signatures and strongly urging Obama to support a UN resolution of this nature. The following comes from their official website. Now is the time for real leadership that can revive and reaccredit the two-state solution as President Obama enters his final months in office. And he can do this, he can lay the groundwork for a two-state agreement in the future by supporting the Israeli-Palestinian two-state resolution in the United Nations Security Council. Now, such a resolution would restore U.S. leadership in the Israeli-Palestinian arena. It would preserve the now foundering two-state outcome, and it would be a gift to the next president, leaving him or her constructive options for consequential actions in the Israeli-Palestinian arena, a place of the ever-worsening, politically stalemated status quo there is today. Sadly, a UN resolution that divides the land of Israel and that formally establishes a Palestinian state would not bring lasting peace. Instead, it would be the biggest mistake of the Obama era, other than, well, let's just say the last one, the Iranian nuclear deal. It would set the stage for a major war between Israel and her neighbors. This is something that was discussed during a recent televised appearance down at Morningside, and if you go to newspaper.com, you can watch it. All the same time this is going on, the global economic crisis continues to escalate. Even though U.S. financial markets are in great shape at the moment, the same cannot be said for the rest of the world. Just look at the country that is hosting the Olympics this summer. Brazil is mired in the worst economic downturn that it has seen since the Great Depression of the 1930s, and Rio de Janeiro's governor has declared a state of financial emergency. Next door, the Venezuelan economy has completely collapsed, and some people have become so desperate that they are actually hunting cats and dogs and pigeons for food. As we all know, CRN, Facebook page, we've been following it. In fact, we just had another addition to the joys of socialism. You'll find that on the CRN Facebook page also if you look. Elsewhere, China is experiencing the worst economic downturn that they have seen in decades. The Japanese are still trying to find the end of their lost decade, and the banking crisis in Europe is getting worse with each passing month. In quite a few articles, we have discussed the ongoing implosion of the biggest, most important bank in Germany. But I am certainly not the only one warning about this. One of his recent articles, Simon Black, also commented on the turmoil of the most dangerous bank in Europe. So well-capitalized banks are supposed to have double-digit capital levels while making low-risk investments. Deutsche Bank, on the other hand, has a capital level of less than 3%, just like Lehman, and an incredibly risky asset base that boasts notional derivatives exposures of more than what? 70 trillion, that's T, trillion dollars, roughly the size of the world GDP. But of course, Deutsche Bank isn't getting a lot of attention from the mainstream media right now because of the stunning meltdown of banks in Italy, Spain, and Greece. Now, here's more from Simon Black. Italian banks are sitting on over 360 billion euros in bad loans right now and are in desperate need of a massive bailout. Now, the IMF calculations show that the Italian banks' capital levels are among the lowest in the world, just ahead of Bangladesh. And this doesn't even scratch the surface of problems in other banking jurisdictions. Spanish banks have been scrambling to raise billions in capital to cover persistent losses that still haven't healed from the last crisis. In Greece, over 35%, that's over a third, of all loans in the banking system are classified as non-performing. That is, they're losing money. So even though U.S. stocks are doing well for the moment, the truth is that trillions of dollars of stock market wealth has been lost globally since this time last year. If you're not familiar with what has been going on around the rest of the planet, this may come as a surprise to you. All right. The author says he would really like it the rest of 2016 was quiet and peaceful as the past couple of days have been. Unfortunately, I don't believe that's going to be the case at all. The storm clouds are rising, and the conditions for a perfect storm are brewing. Sadly, most people are not going to understand what is happening until it is far too late. Well, what do you think? This is from July of 2016. Now, let's go to, all right. We have talked about possible nuclear war. That was started earlier this month from October 4th to the 7th. As we all know, the Russians put 40 million of their people into bomb shelters for 3 days. We know a few months ago, Finland, the Czech Republic, and Germany have told their citizens to start stocking up on supply catch, food and water. They haven't come around and say why. It's supposed to be a precaution, you know, a precaution. So that led to the next, you know, as Terry, I, and Chuck and some others have discussed. It sounds like the Russians are prepping for nuclear combat. Or as Major Khan on Dr. Strangelove said, this is it, boys. We're toe-to-toe nuclear combat with the Ruskies. Now, in case you're not familiar, I found this. It was posted September 7th. And one of the things, it's from Bloomberg News. I'm sorry, Bloomberg Politics. It's by Dave Merrill, Nafisa Saeed, and Brittany Harris from September 7th, 2016. It says, to launch a nuclear strike, Clinton or Trump would follow these steps. These are the steps that the United States government would follow for release of nuclear weapons. And I thought it was interesting because I think we should all be on the same page if we're going to be calling and talking about this stuff. We need to know what the hell we're talking about to begin with. So, to begin with, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have repeatedly accused each other of lacking the fitness, temperament, and qualifications to be commander-in-chief. Clinton has said Trump isn't someone we can trust with nuclear weapons. Trump has called Clinton close to unhinged. Yeah, I think he's right. How much power does the president alone have to launch a nuclear strike? Now, Bloomberg News asked Bruce G. Blair, a former Minuteman missile launch officer and research scholar at Princeton University's Program on Science and Global Security, to spell out the step-by-step procedure. Now, the first step is this. The president considers a nuclear strike. The commander-in-chief's power is clear. He or she has sole authority to use nuclear weapons. Once the decision has been made to use it, the top brass is brought in. So before initiating military action, the president convenes a conference with military and civilian advisors in Washington and around the world to talk through options. In the White House, the call takes place in the Situation Room. If traveling, the president is patched in on a secure line. A key participant in the meeting, the Pentagon's Deputy Director of Operations, an officer in charge of the National Military Command Center, also known as the War Room. This around-the-clock operations center is responsible for preparing and ultimately transmitting a launch order from the president. The head of all U.S. Strategic Nuclear Forces at Strategic Command in Omaha would probably be asked for a briefing on strike options. Now, so far, time elapsed is less than 1 minute. The consultation lasts as long as the president wishes, but if enemy missiles are heading toward the U.S. and the president must order a counterstrike, the consultation may last just 30 seconds. The tight timeline raises the risk of launching hastily on a false warning. That's also called a low response, launch on warning. That is, as soon as our satellites pick up a missile launch and it's determined that the U.S. is the target, it's an automatic strike, return strike. So we've got less than one, the time lapse is less than 1 minute. Now the president decides to launch. Some advisors may try to change the president's mind or resign in protest, but ultimately, the Pentagon must comply with the commander-in-chief's order. So the president has decided to launch. Now the order is verified. The senior officer in the Pentagon War Room must formally authenticate that the person ordering the strike is indeed the president. The officer reads a challenge code, often two phonetic letters from the military alphabet, such as Delta Echo. The president retrieves the biscuit, which is a laminated card the president or military aide carries at all times, and finds the matching response to the challenge code, Charlie Zulu, for instance. Now the order goes out. The war room prepares a launch order. A message that contains the chosen war plan, time to launch, authentication codes, and codes needed to unlock the missiles before firing them. The encoded and encrypted message is only about 150 characters long, about the length of a tweet, for those of you that use Twitter. It is broadcast to each worldwide command and directly to launch crews. The time elapsed is now 2 or 3 minutes. The submarine and ICBM crews receive the message within seconds of the broadcast. Just a few minutes have passed since the initial conference call. Now, the launch crews take over. Launch message in hand, the crews opened locked safes to obtain sealed authentication system. Those are called SAS codes, prepared by the National Security Agency and distributed throughout the military's nuclear chain of command. They compared the SAS codes, again, sealed authentication system codes, in the launch order with those in their safes. Now, if the missiles are launched from a submarine, the captain, executive officer, and two others authenticate the order. The launch message provides the combination to an onboard safe holding the fire control key needed to deploy the missiles. Missiles are ready for launch about 15 minutes after receiving the order. If the missiles are launched from land, 5 launch crews in various underground control centers, 5 launch crews in various underground centers control a squadron of 50 missiles. Each crew consists of 2 officers. The individual teams are spread out miles apart. Each receives the orders, open safes, and compare their SAS codes to those sent by the war room. If they match, the crews enter the message's war plan number into their launch computers to retarget missiles from their peacetime targets in the ocean to their new targets. Using additional codes in the message, the crews enter a few more keystrokes to unlock the missiles before turning launch keys retrieved from their safe. At the designated launch time, the 5 crews turn their keys simultaneously, sending 5 quote-unquote votes to the missiles. Now, some of you have seen the movies where there's a mutiny or there a refusal to follow launch orders, right? Mutiny is unlikely. It takes just 2 votes to launch the missiles. So even if 3 2-officer ICBM crews refuse to carry out the order, it won't stop the launch. Now, about 5 minutes may elapse from the president's decision until intercontinental ballistic missiles blast out of their silos, and about 15 minutes until submarine missiles shoot out of their tubes. Once fired, the missiles and their warheads cannot be called back. That is how a nuclear, well, in theory, how the nuclear strike procedure, or if you want to call it the nuclear strike outline, looks like and how it's supposed to work. So, Bruce G. Blair, who wrote this, is a research scholar at the Program on Science and Global Security at Princeton University and a co-founder of Global Zero. I found that quite interesting article, and I hope you did too. Hope you found it worthwhile. Okay, now I said we were going to talk about some stuff. Since, you know, that article we talked about the first time was from July. Now it's something that we need to kind of look at here. I want to do it the right way. So, what have we got here? All right, what's that one? No, that's from last night. That's from yesterday. Okay. The last 2 days maybe is what's really kind of starting to trouble me. Now this came in, where did we get this? From the Sun. The Sun newspaper, probably out of the United Kingdom. It says, and I picked it up from Red Flag News. This is a Russian nuclear warships steam towards the English Channel as the Royal Navy scrambles. From the Sun, a fleet of Russian nuclear ships have been spotted steaming out of base, and they are heading for Britain. I said they're headed for Britain. Yes, okay, it is. A Sun, a news UK company. So Lou in the garden, she probably has already seen this. And they're saying the Russians are coming. Vladimir Putin's nuclear warships are pictured steaming towards the English Channel as the Royal Navy prepares to scramble the fleet. The Russian fleet is believed to be planning military drills off the Scottish coast before heading towards the Med. Vladimir Putin's policy of gunboat diplomacy continued as a giant aircraft carrier and nuclear submarine were among eight vessels snapped sailing south past Norway yesterday. The Russian Navy flagship and nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, the Admiral Kuznetsov, is leading a group of eight vessels toward the Syrian port of Tartus. The ships are expected to pass through the English Channel, prompting the Royal Navy to prepare to scramble ships. The fearsome fleet is headed for Russia's Mediterranean base in Tartus, Syria. But first, the ships are set to pass through the English Channel in the latest act of saber-rattling from Moscow. Royal Navy ships are being readied to intercept the fleet, which could pass within miles of the British coast. Moscow's media poured scorn on the British fleet in response to the threat today. The defense expert for the Russian news agency RIA Alexander Krolenko derided what little remains of the Royal Navy. Russia's flagship aircraft carrier, the Admiral Kuznetsov, was amongst the ships to depart from the Arctic port of Severomansk on Saturday. The 55,000-ton Colossus is traveling with the Peter Veliki battlecruiser, the Vice Admiral Kulikov destroyer, and large anti-submarine ships. And they were caught on camera by the Norwegian spy planes on Monday. So if you want to see these, again, it's posted on the CRN Facebook page. And it says, what else we got there? Oh, that's what they're going. Oh, that's not good. Let me see what else we got here. Okay, in addition to safeguarding maritime navigation, the ships are meant to respond to new types of modern threats like piracy and international terrorism. The fleet is expected to carry out drills north of Scotland before sailing just miles from the English coast. A NATO naval source said, told the Telegraph, "It's not catching us by surprise. We are working up to what to do, and we are all over it. The most likely thing is that they will go through the North Sea, down the Dover Strait, and through the Channel. They might even stop off at the northeast coast to fly for a bit." But it's not the first time the Royal Navy has been called into action to escort on one of the ships. The HMS York shadows the Admiral Kuznetsov before. They've been watching that. So the shadow strength is the latest act of defiance from Moscow in the face of Western pressure over its bombing campaign in Syria. Now, earlier this month, Russian bombers went on a run around Western Europe, forcing the air forces of four NATO country members to scramble their fighter jets. Vladimir Putin has been supporting embattled Syrian dictator Bashar al-Assad with airstrikes, which we already know. The bombing of an aid convoy last month saw a fragile ceasefire disintegrate and put even greater strain on relations between the U.S. and Moscow. Neighbor Turkey warned yesterday that Syria could become a proxy war for the two superpowers as they pile weapons and advisors into the Middle East. End of story. That's one. But wait. There's more. There's more? There is. This came across last night. Where did we get it? Got it from Red Flag News, but I don't know where they got it. I don't know. However, if this doesn't make you start thinking about, we talked about saber rattling a couple episodes ago. Well, it's here. China. In fact, here you go. China joins Russia in Syria air raids. China has told Moscow that they will join in the bombing in Syria from the aircraft carrier. This has huge implications, folks, and it's huge. It is a well-known fact that the nation of Iran today has two chief allies, Russia and China. They have stood by Iran through the thick and thin, especially with controlling interest as permanent members of the United Nations Security Council. Without Russia and China, Shiite Iran would have been history decades ago. Today, again, they are proving that they are well prepared to stand in opposition to the United States and NATO because all four are vying for world domination. So also the rest of the world's prophetic nations are aligning themselves either for or against either of the two global forces. So Belgrade, this is where they got it. Because coming out of Belgrade, I believe it's called DEPCA. We have no idea what it stands for. DEPCA's military and intelligence sources report that China sent word to Moscow on Friday, October 2nd, that J-15 fighter bombers would shortly join the Russian air campaign that was launched Wednesday, September 30th. Baghdad has, moreover, offered Moscow an airbase for targeting the Islamic State, now occupying large swaths of Iraqi territory, DEPCA.com reports. If you want to read this, it's DEPCA, D-E-B-K-A. So, the J-15 warplanes will take off from the Chinese, Liaoning CV-16 aircraft carrier, which reached Syrian shores on September 26. According to the DEPCA file, this will be a landmark event for Beijing, its first military operation in the Middle East, as well as the carrier's first taste of action in conditions of real combat. Thursday night, China's foreign minister, Wang Yi, made this comment on the Syrian crisis at the UN Security Council session in New York. Quote, the world cannot afford to stand by and look on with folded arms, but must also not arbitrarily interfere in the crisis, end quote. A no less significant development occurred at about the same time when Iraqi Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi, speaking to the U.S. PBS NewsHour, said he would welcome a deployment of Russian troops to Iraq to fight ISIS forces in his country, too. As an added incentive, you know that this would also give Moscow the chance to deal with the 2,500 Chechen Muslims, whom, he said, are fighting with ISIS in Iraq. Baghdad and Moscow have just concluded a deal for the Russian Air Force to start using the Al-Takadim Air Base at Habaniya, 74 kilometers west of Baghdad, both as a way station for the Russian air corridor to Syria and as a launching pad for bombing missions against ISIS forces and infrastructure in northern Iraq and northern Syria. A joint Russian, Iranian, Syrian, and Iraqi war room has been working since last week out of the Iraq Defense Ministry and Ministry Staff Headquarters in Baghdad to coordinate the passage of Russian and Iranian airlifts to Syria and also Russian air raids. Now, this command center is also organizing the transfer of Iranian and pro-Iranian Shiite forces into Syria. Russia has thus gained a military enclave in Iraq, just as it had in Syria, where it has taken over base outside of Latakia on the western coast of Syria. At the same time, the Habaniya Air Base also serves U.S. forces operating in Iraq, which number an estimated 5,000. So now the Chinese want to get in on it. that's a lot of aircraft and a small amount of airspace. Now last night, Last night, if for those of you watching the debate, I couldn't stand the debate because I can't stand that smirk on Hillary's face. I just want to smack it off there. All right. But apparently during the debate, Well, yeah, I'll read it for you. I'll let you know. Pentagon officials are furious after Clinton announces U.S. response time for nuclear launch during debate. They are furious. Following Wednesday's presidential debate, Pentagon officials found themselves completely dumbfounded as to why former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton would feel it appropriate to announce U.S. Special Access Program intel on national television. Well, for you people in the Pentagon, let me help you. First of all, she has no clue when it comes to classified information. As far as she's concerned, classification and classified information, it does not concern her. She is not to be held to any standard. How dare you even think it? So, yeah, special access, which proves this woman has no business being around any classified information whatsoever. Now, according to sources within the Department of Defense, speaking under anonymity, Clinton likely violated at least two Department of Defense SAP protocols. Again, SAP, Special Access Program. Protocols during the debate by announcing on live television the United States government's response time for nuclear launch. The deal is, so here we go. Ready? This is a quote. But here's the deal. The bottom line on nuclear weapons is that when the president gives the order, it must be followed. There's about 4 minutes between the order being given and the people responsible for launching nuclear weapons to do so. That's from Hillary Clinton on last night. Now you know why we talked about how a nuclear launch order is processed and deployed. Now you know. To the dismay of the intelligence officials, the fact that this top secret information is now publicly known not only proves that Clinton is unfit to be commander in chief, but she also poses a direct threat to national security because she can't keep her mouth shut. One high-ranking intelligence official explained that at any time frame calculated pertaining to a U.S. nuclear launch would have merely been an educated hypothesis, absent leaked documents, and there had been no such breaches prior to Clinton's admission on Wednesday. That's from True Pundit. Now, Secretary Clinton proved tonight she is unfit to be commander-in-chief, a top-ranking DOD intelligence source said. What she did compromises our national security. She is cavalier and reckless, and in my opinion, should be detained and questioned so we can unravel why she did what she did. According to the Pentagon sources, the information Clinton disseminated publicly is top secret intel governed under the U.S. Special Access Program, which is known as SAP, S-A-P, which dictates safeguards and protocols for accessing and discussing highly classified and top secret intelligence. The specific details of the country's nuclear response time discussed by Clinton, sources said, are only known by a handful of individuals outside top military brass. Targeting options by ICBM, air or sea, launch order, launch procedures, and response are one of the most secretly guarded tenets of national security and nuclear war policy, a Pentagon source said. It's truly incredible that nuclear response time as part of the ERO, emergency response option, is now out there in the public domain to our adversaries. So U.S. defense sources said, according to developed U.S. counterintel, military officials in China, North Korea, Syria, Russia, Iran, and even actors like ISIS had no previous definitive intelligence to determine the U.S. nuclear response time, especially during an ERO. Prior to the Clinton administration, Clinton's admission Wednesday night, sources reluctantly acknowledged her calculations were accurate. If that's not enough to get you ticked off, I don't know what is. All right, so that is done. I promised you this was not going to be a long episode because of that terrible thing we had last night. I just can't stand even thinking about it. Just can't. Okay. And this came across October 15th. U.S. DEF CON raised to level 3, Air Force ready to mobilize in 15 minutes. The state of affairs between the U.S. and Russia at this time seems to be unstable. The U.S.-Russia Cold War has become a greater concern more recently. Shades of the Cold War and nuclear arms race are being reflected in today's reality. Now, given the current situation, has the U.S. elevated its defense system to DEF CON Level 3? The DEF CON refers to a defense readiness condition, which states the level of readiness to act against an external threat, such as that of nuclear war. DEF CON can be referred to in its five levels. Level 5 would be the state of lowest risk. Level 1, on the other hand, would refer to an imminent threat of nuclear war and indicate the state's position to immediately respond. Level 3 means that the Air Force will only be ready to mobilize in a mere 15 minutes. So if my guess is they got their planes on 15-minute launch. So according to the unofficial site DEF CON Warning System, DEF CON is already at Level 3. Current international events, rising tensions, therefore the increased possibility of a declared U.S.-Russia war seems to have been raised a level. There's no lack of potential triggers, the greatest of which would be the state of Syrian civil war, which has had both the U.S. and Russia blaming each other over a broken ceasefire agreement, bombed aid envoys, and devastating airstrikes on and around Aleppo. Now, with the U.S. backing rebel groups and Russia pushing Bashar al-Assad's government, the continued bloodshed has not made communication between those two nations any easier. Meanwhile, Russia has joined China in trying to block the operation of a U.S. missile network in Europe and Asia. The tensions have even spilled over onto the presidential election, where suspicions of Donald Trump conspiring with Russians have cropped up. Though the threat of war seems to be rising on a few fronts, the DEF CON Level 3 indication reported by the website is only speculation. The actual DEF CON status is not shared with the public by the U.S. military for obvious security reasons. The website, unaffiliated with any branch of the military, urges voters to make their own evaluations and learn what steps to take in the event of a nuclear attack. So while being ready for a nuclear attack or a Russian war, we can certainly put the public at ease. However, nothing would be better than the two superpowers just simply backing down. Well, there you go. More fun stuff to get you concerned about what the hell is going on. And bear in mind, the mainstream media is not going to say anything about this. They're just not going to. They're more worried about what Donald Trump said or did not say, do or did not do 11 years ago. Apparently, that's far more important. Now, if you don't believe me, World War III has already started. You heard me. World War III has already started. It's in cyberspace. I guarantee you they've been fighting in cyberspace for a lot longer than what we all want to know or much less admit. But the fact is they are. And apparently the CIA is reportedly preparing for major cyber assault against Russia in the wake of the hack attacks. Huh. Even I find that somewhat interesting. Now, from thehill.com comes an opinion piece. It's from October 14th. It says, Russia prepares for war while we're distracted with tapes and emails. Okay. Oh, what is that? Get off of there, you goof. There we go. Now, while the attention of our news media is consumed with video comments and email releases, other factors may be influencing our future. Over the last week, there have been a significant number of movements by Russia on the world stage. So multiple media outlets are reporting on large-scale civil defense drills in Russia, which ABC News has reported. Quote, the Russian Emergencies Ministry has launched a sweeping nationwide civil defense drill is set to involve 40 million people. Emergencies Minister Vladimir Puchkov said the four-day exercise launched Wednesday will help raise government efficiency while dealing with the consequences of a large-scale emergencies. Citing routine drills, Russia has even moved missiles within striking range of NATO targets into the Kaliningrad enclave bordering Poland and Lithuania. Meanwhile, CNN informs us that Moscow abruptly left a nuclear security pact, citing U.S. aggression, and moved nuclear-capable the Iskander missiles to the edge of NATO territory in Europe. Its officials have openly raised the possible use of nuclear weapons. Now, what we do know is that the U.S. nuclear policy is for retaliation, not first strike. While Russia may be preparing for difficult times, citing local media, the Daily Mail reports that Russia is ordering all of its officials to fly home any relatives living abroad, fearing a global war. Politicians and high-ranking figures allegedly received warning from President Vladimir Putin to return to the motherland. We've talked about this story last week. So the Daily Mail added that all this is occurring while Putin canceled a planned visit to France amid a furious row over Moscow's role in the Syrian conflict. UPI, United Press International, further confirmed the growing strain in relations between Russia and the West. Quote, tensions continue to rise between the U.S. and Russia as Russian foreign minister said Sunday, recent actions and statements threaten his country's national security. Russian foreign minister Sergei Lavrov said in a television interview Sunday, the United States and NATO were taking aggressive steps rooted in Russophobia, and that recent remarks by leaders pose a threat to Russia's national security. This tension is spilling out into territory beyond the U.S. as well, as reports show the European Union is less likely to ease sanctions on Moscow over Ukraine. Now that Russia has intensified airstrikes on EU and U.S.-friendly rebels in Syria, they are even considering more punitive steps. The White House is now responding. Press Secretary Josh Ernst said this week the U.S. was considering a range of proportional responses to alleged Russian hacking of the U.S. political groups like the DNC. Now, the accusation from Washington, CNN reports, came after the Syrian ceasefire talks broke down when the U.S. officials suggested Russia should be investigated for war crimes. America's attention is diverted by a contested election. Europe has the fate of the European Union, a refugee crisis, and the international monetary crisis dominating their news. Now, in the book, The Guns of August, if you have not read it, you need to read it. It's a very good book. I've read it. In The Guns of August, we are reminded that, quote, what a staff makes out of the available evidence depends upon the degree of optimism or pessimism prevailing among them, on what they want to believe or fear to believe, end quote. Well, the back and forth between Russia and the West grows in intensity as time goes on. The U.S. is threatening retaliation for alleged Russian cyber attacks. The United States government has better produce the evidence before taking any retaliatory actions. Otherwise, it risks further embarrassment on the world diplomatic stage at the hands of the Russians, which can only bolster the Russian position at the expense of the U.S. international diplomacy. Escalation of minor incidents, diversion from other issues, and miscalculations of expected responses are some of the causes of the greatest conflicts in history. Now, these often back adversaries into corners that neither can escape from. We are witnessing an escalation in tensions based on perceived weaknesses and conflicting interests. Posturing of military forces within close proximity to each other in geographic areas that are politically unstable, with both sides engaged in uncoordinated combat operations against a range of adversaries, only requires one incident to rapidly spiral events out of control
and produce an effect that none of us is expecting, but which will influence all of our futures. Now, that was written by DiMaggio, his retired special agent in charge and retired captain of the U.S. Navy. It is his opinion and is not to reflect the opinion of the U.S. Navy or the U.S. government. Nonetheless, he does have quite a lot to say about it. But anyways, I wanted to share that with you. Not to scare you. No. But to get you concerned enough to start thinking about things. So, what else we got? Okay. In the meantime, yeah, like I said, this was going to be a short one, and it's been about an hour now. All right, Saturday night. Saturday night. We've got Ladies of the Watch. Julie's audience is growing. Thank you for listening, listeners, because you know what? Without your support, without your participation, simply by listening in, and some of you even more by calling in, Contra Rio Network cannot do the things that we're doing. And I want to thank those of you that have donated, you know, a dollar or two. Thank you so much. It's a dollar or two a month. Go to patreon.com if you like what you hear, if you want us to continue this. Patreon.com/Contra Radio. We got over 12,000 listens. You know, if everyone just threw in a buck or two, it'd make it a lot easier. And I can get bigger broadcast packages from the Blog Talk Radio and get some really heavy duty sponsors in to help us out. But that's, you know, neither here nor there. I just wanted to put it out there. Thank you for those of you that, you know, could spare the dollar or two a month. I really appreciate that. That's all we really ask for. All right. With that said, so Saturday night, 8 p.m. Central Daylight Time, Julie's show, Ladies of the Watch. And then I'll be back Sunday night on Contra Radio Network. And then we'll have Terry and Chuck back in. So, like I said, this is just a makeup episode because last night's episode was so subpar. I didn't like it. Didn't like the way it turned out. I didn't. It's not that they didn't do a bad job. I just think it could be a lot better. So with that said, I want to say thank you for listening to this impromptu episode. I wanted to get this out. I thought it was important. And that's why. I want to get the information out. So anything else? Nope, I think I'll do it. Okay, so for my prepper and patriot friends out there, I say to you this. Be safe. Be alert. And be vigilant. We'll see you again Saturday night with Julie's show. And I'll be back Sunday night at 8 o'clock also. I'm John Jeffers with the Contra Radio Network. Thank you for listening. I appreciate it. And have a good afternoon.
Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More. Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy. They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine & More.